question from the audience. In 1917, there was a peaceful protest, no violence. What is your response to the protest in Baltimore and Chicago, for instance? This type of action does not encourage harmony and unity of people. What are your thoughts about?
Well, people didn't like what I said, and people probably won't like what I said, will say about it now. I thought it was just horrible. You know, you could not tell who were the ones who were protesting or who were the ones who was burning things down. And so Black Lives Matter should have stood up and said, this is not what we mean by protest. And I thought it was outrageous, and I stood up against it. And anytime you see people who are trying to harm somebody, that's not the way we change things. So you just don't have to like me. But if I see it's going wrong, I'm sure Mrs. King would have not been for that kind of violent protest.
What is your most treasured memory of Coretta Scott King? What memory of hers do you treasure the most?
It's hard to just say any one memory. It's just too many memories. But I guess the ones that I had, she took me home to see her parents. And I had a little grocery store. They were in the country people. And we sat there, and we could hear the rustle of the pine trees. And she said, look around. As far as you can see, that's our land. That's Scott land. And when she would take me on her private trips, and we were just hanging out together, and I was saying, wow, this is Mrs. King. But she had people like, you know, it was like you were very special to her. And everybody felt that she was special. We were just special to her. And so I just think of being able to be in the home that she shared with Dr. King and sitting there at the same table that her and Dr. King sat there. And just knowing that she, I guess it's this thing, I knew she trusted me to tell the truth when she was no longer could tell the truth about herself. And I think that's what inspires me now. In fact, there, have time to read one thing? This is what she's left with all of us. She said, I want people to know that I was committed to leaving an eternal flame built on love that would never be extinguished. I wanted this flame to touch lives, communities, and nations. I wanted it to ignite and inspire. I wanted it to be an urgent call to community and public service. Love is not a program. It's not a political party. It's not a race. It is a power with a promise with a power all its own. The contributions of Martin and me and of those behind and before are the greatest witnesses I can imagine to the power of love in action. And when it's time to end this journey, I will count it all joy. This is what she left for each one of us.
Thank you. So the relationship with her children, could you speak to that, to what it was like, if any of them are continuing the movement? And yeah, and if there was any, the one that's not with us is Yolanda, if there was anything you want to share about her. I know that's kind of full, but her relationship with her children.
Yeah, that's what she really impressed me about, is she loved her children. And she would say, I don't care who I'm talking to, she'd say her staff, if I'm talking to the President of the United States, if my child calls, send it through. And each one of the children has a part of them. Like Yolanda was a very great actress. She starred in some of them. I think one was, I think, Jug. But anyway, she performed. She was on TV, and she developed the community arts programs at the center. She had her mother's theatrical, dramatic effect. Martin Luther King III is more like a social activist. He campaigns for social justice. Dexter is more like the business person. He takes care of intellectual property, which makes sure that the king name is not just slandered or used or defiled. And Bernice King runs the King Center in Atlanta. And I was there a couple of months ago, and they do a lot of nonviolent training. And I did see that Eternal Frame. I just, when I was there, there is the crypt of Dr. King and Mrs. King together. I saw this little eternal flame, and I just kept staring at it because I knew that's what she wanted. She wanted to ignite. She wanted to inspire, and she wanted us to go on. So,
thank you. You mentioned that Mrs. King attended Antioch College in Yellow Springs, Ohio. Can you share insight as to how attending this progressive social justice advocating institution shaped her life thereafter?
Well, you have to know that she had to be trained to become a world leader. If your context, it would be whites who hated you. You couldn't be a person who could see love and kindness in all people. But Lincoln School, where she had white teachers for the first time, she could learn that all white people didn't hate her. I mean, if people are burning down your house, how are you going to think white people are nice? You know, that situation can be reversed. But Antioch was a bubbling, vibrant kind of social justice. I mean, everybody here could go to Antioch and just fit right in. And so she went there, and she had tutors, but she also had the first campaign that she had to face. Everybody was supposed to be able to student teach, but because in Xenia, Ohio, they wouldn't let blacks student teach, so they wanted her to go someplace else. And she refused and had to stay much longer to graduate. And she wrote a long letter of protest against that situation. So that was her first confrontation. It was the first time that she understood that she could not date interracially, because she was very much in love with a young white guy who was her pianist. And they went out to dinner, and everything was going fine. And one day, his family was coming. And so the family said, oh, we're all going to go out to eat, but where's Coretta going to go? And she understood that they were not going to accept her. But that was her first love before Dr. King, one of her first.
Music was a big part of the movement. Do you have some specific stories about her musical influence, favorite songs, or special events?
I think that's what she did. She used music to move the movement. There's something about a song. Well, speaking of such, out of tune, but still a song. There's something about singing that will inspire you. If you think about it, all during the movement, people would sing "This Little Light of Mine," "We Shall Overcome," "Go Tell It on the Mountain," "I'm No Ways Tired." What was the song that was being sung today? I walked in. Anybody remember the first song? "I Am Determined." Songs like that, that when you look around and all hell is breaking out, that this song just stirs up hope in you. And anytime you would go to the King movement, that they were afraid to come outside because there were people out there with guns wanting to shoot them. They would be in there singing, you know, until they could feel the Spirit of the Lord moving. So the song is so important to a movement, to sing. I'll sing out justice. I'll sing out freedom. All those songs were so inspiring to her. Paul Robeson, they met, and she took some of her inspiration from him because he was a great storyteller. So she borrowed the storytelling part of Paul Robeson and then put the singing with her. And even in Atlanta, she worked against blacks not being allowed to go to the opera. You know, almost everything we've done, we've had to fight for it, every little thing. So blacks couldn't go to the opera. So she went and she fought that fight with the Metropolitan Opera. but she always had a song. The kids used to say, when they wake up in the morning, you know, her mom would be singing. No matter what was going on, she'd wake up with a song. Sort of lifts you up if you have a song.
We Americans elected Mr. Obama twice, surely a sign of inclusion and acceptance. Yet during his presidency, race relations were not good, perhaps as bad as 34 years ago. Would you speak to why?
Race relations? Well, because we still can't confront the issue. We try to hide it. We try to call it something else. We try to say it's dead, but it's still here. But personally, just as a person, I was very optimistic. I mean, you would think that after all these years, to see a person who looked like me in the White House, the First Lady, and the first grandmother, and I could tell my kids, look what you can be. I mean, I was extremely, you know, inspired. Some other people were not. But I could see that if you can get this far, you can become president and you can have, you know, look, golly, just look at the grace and the charm. And we got a president that had no scandal. Can you imagine that? Obama's White House, they had no scandal. You know, he did not cheat on his wife. They did not curse and you look around and all of that. And so I think that he was a little timid, more timid than he should have been, to talk about race because he knew he had so many haters, you know. And the more you talk about one group, it gives you ammunition for other people. I could not believe it, but I was teaching at Central State. I did a whole talk on character assassination because I went and found all of these images of the Obamas looking like monkeys. For some reason, you know, they had them in ape suits. And, it just crushed me in a sense to see that here's a man, you know, that Trump said he wasn't even born in America. And that continued to be the birth of movement. I mean, like, what are you supposed to do? I mean, you prove water's wet, that this is a flower. He was born here. And people believed it because certain people want to believe the worst of certain other people, not just blacks, but there's certain people that want to believe the worst about this group or that group. And lying is very fashionable now.
Thank you.
It really is. I wanted to still... I did a column about how I went to the White House because I felt that I wanted to belong. And so I knocked on the door and I said, I wanted to call myself Princess Barbarita from the island of Camelot. And so I gave the guard my credentials. And he came back. He said, I don't see your name in our system. I said, I want to go to a steak dinner. I'm Princess Barbarita from the island of Scamalot. And he went back. I still don't see your credentials in the system. He says, young lady, I think you're lying. I said, this is why I'm here. I'm a liar, and I want to join the administration. You know what? And then he came back. He said, are you a millionaire liar? I said, no, sir. He said, are you a billionaire liar? I said, no, sir. Well, you can't come in here. Just go someplace else. And I talked about filing a discrimination suit against them for not having all liars should be equal, all liars. But anyway, it was fun.
Thank you, Dr. Barbara Reynolds. Thank you for sharing your time and your expertise with us today. You have been listening to the Manadok Summer Lyceum on New Hampshire Public Radio. The Lyceum represents a weekly series of lectures held at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Peterborough, New Hampshire. For more information about the Lyceum, you can visit our website at www.manadoklyceum.org and stay up to date by liking us on Facebook. The program next Sunday will feature Ingrid Thoth. Thank you, Dr. Barbara Reynolds, for your wonderful talk. Now please join us for more time with our presenter and for some refreshments in the parish hall. We would like to thank Trin Han for the beautiful flowers and the New Hampshire Charitable Foundation and Pew Foundation for sponsoring today's program. If you have any questions that were not answered during the program, please feel free to ask them during the reception. Thank you for coming today and making possible this lively dialogue. We'd like to hear from you about your experience today, and we encourage you to fill out the blue card and add your name to our mailing list on the clipboards available in the reception. Thank you. Thank you.